Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
You either have grace or you don't.
Read Grace's work in The Spectator and see her recommended reading at gracecurleyshow.com.
She's got to take a drug test. There's no way somebody can act that way and be normal.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley, host of the Grace Curley Show.
Grace. Grace Curley.
Grace!
Oh, dear God. Everyone's least favorite state representative, not state rep, congressman, U.S. congressman from Massachusetts, Seth Moulton, is running for the Senate, challenging Ed Markey. Great. Okay. I've got not much to say about that right now. I will develop more thoughts and opinions on it later. This is going to be a glorious, glorious midterm season. All of these established Democrats are being primaried by cohorts, by people in the other part of the legislature, and they're AOC. AOC is going to have to run against Schumer. I'm calling it now. There's no way Schumer gets through this unscathed. If Moulton's going after Ed Markey, I mean, I don't care which one we have. We're going to have one of them unless there's this supremely glorious Republican or independent that comes along and just dazzles everybody, puts everybody in Massachusetts in a trance and says, vote Republican. You will vote for me. That's what we're stuck with. So it's six of one, half dozen of the other. In Maine, I just want, because we have sound of this, and this is just very, very cringe-inducing. Janet Mills was defending her run for the Senate. She's governor right now. She's running for the Senate as her governorship is up. And she did an interview, which I guess she paid for this interview to be done, according to the Maine Wire, Maine Trust for Local News. And it was bizarre. She did not look healthy, blinking a lot, speaking fast. I don't know. Some people are suggesting some substance abuse. I am not saying that, but some people are. This is her talking about why she's entering the race. Again, not much about her accomplishments as governor, her accomplishments as attorney general, her accomplishments in the state legislature. But you know why she's doing it. Cut 32.
It'd be pretty hard to face my granddaughters, to look them in the eye, and to say that I hadn't done everything I possibly could to protect their freedoms, their rights, when I had the chance to do so. I'm not going to let them down.
What rights? What freedoms is she referring to? I don't understand. Were her grandkids born in Mexico and they came over here illegally? I was not aware of that. And not talking about Mexico, Maine. Don't text in with that one. I'm on to you, texters. But I thought yesterday it was the reason she ran was her dad. And now it's her granddaughters. Pick a side. Pick a generation. She was asked about her opponent in the Democratic primary, Graham Plattner. An oyster farmer, U.S. Marine, endorsed by Bernie Sanders. Cut 33.
We've run people against Susan Collins before, and she has won. She won handily the last few times, and she won because we ran people who were untested. Okay. I don't know much of anything about Graham Plattner. I know a couple of the other guys who were running. One of them is a brewer. That's one reason I said I'd have a beer with him. Oh. But listen.
He dropped out.
I'm the only one in the race who's actually won an election. And that's important to have that under your belt. I'm the only one in the race who's actually delivered progress for Maine people, expanding health care to 100,000 people in the state, fully funding education, providing free school meals in all the public schools, providing free community college, 2 years of community college for all recent high school grads, you know, signing into law paid family medical leave, helping draft it and sign it into law. These are huge things, and it's taken a lot of work, a lot of effort, and I have that experience. So I'm the only one in the race who has stood up to Donald Trump.
Ooh.
Therefore, I think my candidacy is far different than anybody else's.
In a way, she's right, but I also disagree. I think that she's got a point where, you know, you do need some sort of name recognition when you're running against an established U.S. senator. How many times has Elizabeth Warren been challenged here in Massachusetts? Most recently by John Deaton. Some just, you know, not to discredit the guy, but, you know, I didn't know who the hell he was. Never heard of him before. And most of the people in Massachusetts never heard of him before. You're just some, basically it boils down to you being a blow-in and you think you're going to take on this established brand of Democrat here in Massachusetts. It can hardly be done. Scott Brown was very lucky the first time, but nobody's been able to do it again. So I think she has a point where you do need some name recognition in order to challenge somebody. But in the same vein, you have Susan Collins, who's 72 years old. Janet Mills is 77 years old. You know, these are already candidates for AARP. They're already, you know, past retirement age. They are aged candidates. And people don't want that anymore. People want younger blood in those seats. They want younger representation. They want younger ideals. And I think that somebody like Graham Plattner, again, I don't know anything about him outside than what he's pushing, that he's an oyster farmer and a U.S. Marine. Not that I'm doubting those credentials. That's just what I know about him through his own ads and through what Janet Mills is saying about him. But he's a younger guy. He is supported by Bernie Sanders, whom a lot of young people identify with. Strangely enough, he's got that appeal of that ideology that is very, very attractive. It's Zohran Mamdani like. It's free everything. It's socialism, communism. That's attractive to young people who are priced out of the system. They can't afford a home. They can't afford a car. They don't even want to get driver's licenses. They don't want to go to work. They want to work from home if they want to work at all. Ideally, they just like to sit in the basement and smoke a joint or something. Whatever they're doing these days. I don't know what the drugs are. But this is... this is Graham Plattner, the other Democratic opponent. Again, the Brewer dropped out yesterday, shortly after Janet Mills announced that she was running. This is Graham Plattner's response ad to Janet Mills throwing her hat into the race. And, you know, there are some times where I'm so grateful that this is radio and I'm not able to show you something because the cringe is just so much. This is one of those cases where I'm kind of upset that we're on radio as our main source of broadcast, and you can't see. One of these women has to be Graham's mom, I think. I don't know if his mom's still with us. If she's not, I'm sorry, Graham. But this, whatever ad agency you're using, bud, not working out. You gotta get better actors than this. Cut 34.
Janet Mills again? She was a good governor, but I think it's time for change.
What about that oyster farmer, Graham Plattner?
You can tell that he has got a heart for the Maine people.
He's a Marine, and he was in the Army. We need someone strong to beat Collins.
He's a real Downeaster. Maybe he could shuck up the system. The way things are right now, we need somebody who's going to take it to Trump.
I think he'll really fight for us.
I'm Graham Plattner, and I approve this message.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I have not unclenched yet. That's just so cringe-inducing. There are many things to be said about that ad. I think that one cut pretty much sums it up.
Maybe he could shuck up the system.
It makes me think of stuff I used to be proud of when I was a wee lad in my freshman days of, I'll go to college, in the radio broadcasting program at the New England School of Communications in Bangor, Maine, which is now, I believe, full-on Husson University. If I go back and listen to some of my air checks from those days and some of the promos that I used to write, some of the public service announcements that I entered into scholarship contests that I thought, oh my God, this is going to win. Oh my God, I have got the golden pipes and everything I say is radio gold. If I go back and listen to those, this is what I hear.
Maybe he could shuck up the system.
Yeah, that's the cringe level. It's bad. It's bad. But here's to Graham Plattner and Janet Mills eating their own and going at it with each other. One's backed by Bernie Sanders, the other is backed by Chuck Schumer. This should be an interesting race to watch. 844-500-4242. I'm Taylor Cormier. I'm getting the shuck out of here for a few moments. We'll be right back.
Follow Grace on X at @G_Curly. This is the Grace Curley Show. Shake it up.
Shuck it up. I'm gonna shuck up the system. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Matt, what is the poll question? What are the results thus far?
And you can vote in the poll question by going to gracecurlyshow.com. Who would you rather see challenge Susan Collins in the head-to-head Senate race? Bernie Bro, Graham Plattner, or Schumer Shill, Janet Mills?
Shuck that guy. I'm going with Janet Mills.
Janet Mills has 44%. Graham Plattner has 56%.
So I'm just willing to take that. I think the contrast is too stark when you put Susan Collins, who not only, she's younger than Janet Mills, but she sounds older. If you've ever listened to her speak, she just sounds older. And, you know, we're a fickle, we're a fickle group of voters. We go for things like that. You know, if somebody sounds old versus somebody who sounds young, we're probably going to skew younger. Sorry, we're just shallow like that. That's how it is. So I think the contrast is just too stark to have a young person, you know, 40-something-year-old Graham Plattner up against Susan Collins, who's 72 and would be getting out of her her next term at the age of, what, 78, 79? I don't want to take my chances with that. I'd rather have Janet Mills in there, who is older than Susan Collins, who is probably more liberal than Graham Plattner. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But I like my chances with Janet Mills going after Susan Collins rather than the other guy. 844-500-4242. A couple of things. We've got a guest coming up in just a few minutes here on the Grace Curley Show. A couple of things that I just wanted to go over before we kind of say sayonara for the day. Highways safer as Oklahoma troopers and ICE arrest 91 illegal alien commercial truckers in Oklahoma alone. This is absolutely incredible. My socials have been flooded with reels that show American drivers that are able to speak English and actually read road signs coming across other drivers, truck drivers, who are possibly illegal, but definitely foreign-born and maybe English language challenged, not able to comply with the rules of the road. Saw one with a truck just rolling away into the middle of the road from a gas station that wasn't, they didn't have the parking brake and all the brakes engaged. Saw another one that was just facing the wrong side of the highway completely after coming through a toll gate the wrong way. And the trucker pulls up to him and says, what the shuck are you doing? And that's the word of the day. It's the word. It's the Sesame Street word of the day is shuck. And he says, I don't know. Dude, you got to first of all put your hazards on and you got to explain why. And we just ended up calling the cops. But 91 illegal alien commercial truckers arrested in Oklahoma, in a joint operation between state troopers and ICE. Absolutely amazing. The CDLs were, many of them, let's see, from California, most of them from California, 44, New York, 14. Thank God Massachusetts isn't on this list, but we're probably not too far behind. Pennsylvania, 12, Illinois, 11 of these illegally issued CDLs. And the countries of origin, India topped the list, 39 of them of Indian origin. Next was Uzbekistan, 13, and China, 12. And this, I mean, I'm glad we're paying attention to this and that the Transportation Department is paying attention to this more after that crash in Florida a few weeks ago where an entire family was just wiped out. Because somebody, an illegal alien truck driver, decided to, I'm just going to cut across the entire highway with my trailer, blocking anybody from traveling. And if you're not paying attention, you didn't brake in time, you're going to get beheaded, which is what happened. One more thing, transgender identification in free fall among young Americans. Eric Kaufman, director of the Center and Professor of Politics at the University of Buckingham, found that transgender and queer identification has dropped sharply among young Americans in Generation Z since 2023. Polled over 60,000 students in 2025, Kaufman found that just 3.6% of respondents identified as a gender other than male or female. That figure is compared to a 5.2% in 2024 and 6.8% in 2022 and 2023. Interesting to see that. I'd be interested to know as why, or maybe people are just scared to respond truthfully to a poll. Time will tell. Seth Aitken, candidate for Bristol County District Attorney, joins us next on the Grace Curley Show. Don't go anywhere.
Maybe he could shuck up the system.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome to the Grace Curley Show. I'm Taylor Cormier, filling in for Grace Curley. Very excited to see this. Tonight there is a meet and greet, a town hall kind of program in New Bedford at the historic Wamsutta Club on County Street. Been there many times, performed there, sat in there for a few meetings like this, and there tonight as part of the program is attorney Seth Aitken, and he's running for Bristol County District Attorney. And I Seth, I'm sorry. I missed the announcement. I didn't see this. I don't get to pay attention as closely to local politics as I used to since I was working in New Bedford. But I'm glad to see that you're running for Bristol County District Attorney. You're the first Republican in over 50 years to run for the position. Why did you decide to run? What's your background? Give us kind of the Reader's Digest version of that.
Sure. Army officer for 8 years before I decided to go to law school, and been an assistant district attorney under two administrations here in Bristol County, New Bedford, Fall River, Attleboro, worked in all those courts, Taunton, and in between did some time private practice. I worked with my dad, which was an incredible experience, and then most recently was the city administrator in Fall River. So seeing the municipal side, seeing the prosecution side and the defense side, and also having the opportunity to be in private practice, I've just seen, first of all, the effect that that an overwhelmed, understaffed, undertrained DA's office can have on how the system functions. Right now, it's a broken system. This DA's office is not effective, especially the district court, which is almost 99% of the cases that come in Massachusetts are brought in the district court. They're misdemeanors, but punishable by up to 2.5 years in jail. And those courts are staffed by the least experienced prosecutors in the office. They have the least amount of resources, least amount of training. Frankly, they get the least amount of encouragement or FaceTime with the DA. And so it's certainly not just a tough job, but a job that's made tougher by the dysfunction and lack of leadership in this DA's office. And I think it has to be better because, frankly, those cases are the ones that intersect most frequently with ordinary folks who are either victims of crime, witnesses to crime, crimeers in their neighborhoods, or they happen to care about the neighborhood or the city or town they live in. And crime affects everything from property values to just their overall sense of safety and peace of mind in their homes. So making sure that this system works right is critically important. It's a leadership issue. It's a legal issue. But to me, most importantly, it's an issue for somebody that wants to do the job, that cares about doing the job. And the level of complacency right now in the current office is essentially making it totally untenable.
So when you say, Seth, it's a leadership issue, yep. is Tom Quinn not using resources adequately or effectively, or is he not advocating for resources from the state? Which is it, or is it both?
So I think it's both. Yeah, I think it's both. I think the budget in Bristol County significantly less than Suffolk County, although the numbers are not that much less in terms of the number of prosecutions, the size of the courthouses, and the busyness of the courthouses. But I would also say that the resources that he does have are not being utilized appropriately. And maybe I'm just sensitive to this as a former Army guy. It's very much about, you know, how you deploy, you know, your best resources. But there is a lot of fat at the top. There's a lot of very highly paid folks, you know, that work, but may not be doing the work that needs to be done. And the folks at the bottom of the totem pole are really bearing the brunt of that. So I think it's both.
So in recent memory, we've had this this judge in New Bedford, Judge Darnbrough, who was having sexual relations with somebody in the courthouse that was on the staff of the courthouse. He stepped down or was disrobed. Well, disrobed, probably the wrong term to use there. But this woman that was in the courthouse, she's still there. She still has her job, even though she was fraternizing with basically her boss.
So, you know, this is the lawyer training coming out. It's still, you know, alleged. You know, they both deny it. I don't think anything's necessarily been proven, but there's a lot of evidence there. This is a prosecutor, a current prosecutor who still works in New Bedford District Court. As far as I understand, has never been investigated. There's been very little inquiry into what involvement she might have had in this thing, whereas you have a judge who stepped down, who walked away, you know, that imbalance to me is striking. And frankly, that's par for the course with this DA's office. Things like that happen. You don't hear a word. There's very little done. There's no action. There's no statement. There's no nothing. And it's business as usual. And that is a huge problem because I think it undermines the trust that people have in the work of the DA's office, their ability to get a fair trial, their ability to get a fair prosecution, and frankly, the zealousness of the DA's office in prosecuting crime undermines all of it.
So when I was working in the newsroom at WBSM many, many moons ago, what I would always hear from the mayor, be it Scott Lang or John Mitchell of New Bedford, or any of the other the community's leadership, is that, you know, we see the crime, we really can't do anything about it. Our police do all of the arrests that they can, but we're pretty much hamstrung by these judges that are in the courthouses. They are just letting these people go with slaps on the wrist. Does the DA's office have, I mean, can you go for more maximum sentences? Can you lean on to these judges a little bit more than current leadership can?
I think I can. So a lot of the judges that are in place now are folks that were practicing law when I started, people that I've known for quite some time, and not just because of the personal relationship, but because I think they've seen how I practice, they've seen my level of preparation, how I do the work. There's a mutual respect. And so I don't know that that exists currently in the DA's office. The DA has spent a lot of time with editorials and other stuff, you know, just statements out there kind of slamming the judges. It's really one of the few things that does come out of that office. And all that does is it makes the judges angry, and they're less likely even more to do what you're asking them to do. I actually believe that I do have a relationship with many of these judges where I could approach them privately and say, look, you know, this is important, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. But I think on top of that, one of the reasons why it seems like a revolving door in a lot of these courthouses isn't just on the judges. I do think what we have is we have some inexperienced DAs who are not being trained, who don't necessarily know how to make the argument. They don't necessarily know what to ask for and when. And sometimes in the law, timing and understanding and expecting exactly what the judge is looking for, what they want to hear, what they're thinking about, is the key to successfully getting what you're asking for. So I think it's unfortunately failing on two sides. It is that the judges, I think, are frustrated and fed up with this DA's office, but the DAs themselves may not be making the argument they need to make. And that's a recipe for disaster.
What about no cash bail? I mean, that's a hot button issue. We see it in New York. We see it in some instances in Massachusetts. I don't think it's really law of the land yet, but a lot of communities do encourage a no cash bail kind of system. What are your thoughts on no cash bail? And would you be an advocate in, you know, defending against no cash bail on a state level?
So I will say a bright line rule of no cash bail, I think, could frankly have both a good and a bad effect. I don't love hard and fast rules around those sort of things, because I think there are instances where cash bail is appropriate, and there's other times when it's not. So I really think what you desperately need is judges who take a conservative law and order view, and the only way we're going to do that is to get a Republican in the state house, to get more Republican leaders in the state house, but also to have DAs that essentially put the judge on the spot because they're making the argument for public safety. They're making the argument that holds both the judge and, frankly, the defendant accountable for what they did. I think it all starts and ends with the quality of the prosecutors you're putting up there and the quality of the training they're getting to make the argument. Frankly, I think blaming it on, you know, a cash bail system or no cash bail system or the lack of one or the other is a little bit of a punt, to be honest with you. I think it all starts and ends with the quality of the people that you have in the court and training them to be the best possible advocates for what you're trying to do, which in this case is hold the people that put the public at risk.
Well, it's definitely a punt when you see, you know, places like New York just letting people out and saying, hey, don't do it again. I don't want to see you back in here for this same crime. But what would your parameters be? You said there are certain circumstances where no cash bail might be appropriate. What are your parameters for that?
So if there is some other measure that you can put in place, so I very rarely would advocate ever for just letting somebody out and say, you know, wag your finger at them and say, don't do it again. That's crazy, because the vast majority of the folks that find themselves in court do so after having done that thing that they're accused of probably many times before anyone ever catches them. We all know that our police departments are understaffed. We're having trouble recruiting and retaining police officers. And so we know that people are getting away with things probably many times over before they're ever brought to court. So the don't do it again does not work. However, there are other supervision measures that can be put in place. There's bracelets. There's all sorts of other things that can be done, especially when you have somebody that might be nonviolent, but you know they're going to continue to offend. And if you don't intervene, then it'll ultimately become violent. You know, I know we have kind of a soft approach to substance use in the state, but substance use can become a gateway to violent crime, because folks will do pretty much anything to get the drug that they seek, that they use, that they need. And so if you get somebody early on, I don't think it's bad to put them on a bracelet. There might be some programs and some other things that can try to intervene, because at the end of the day, you have two priorities. One is you obviously want to hold criminals accountable. But the other thing is you want to reduce recidivism as much as you can, because frankly, that's what's clogging the dockets in our courts, is people that are, we call frequent flyers. They just come back over and over and over again because what's being done is not helping. So I know that I'm verging into liberal territory here talking about programming. But what I'm really talking about is how do you reduce the recidivism so that you can actually focus on the serious crime that does occur in the district court. It's not just the superior court that is serious crime.
Right. We're speaking with Seth Aitken. He's a Republican candidate for Bristol County District Attorney. He's going to be at the Wamsutta Club in New Bedford tonight with several other candidates. There's also going to be a gubernatorial town hall with Mike Keneally, who's running for governor. Says here on the flyer, Seth, major announcement. Any idea what are you able to clue us in at all?
Sure. Yeah. The last couple of months, it's been sort of a soft start to the campaign, going around talking to Republican town committees. This is going to be the formal launch of the campaign.
Great.
This is going to be where I announce that this district attorney has a challenger, first Republican in more than 50 years, and that we're going to knock on the doors. We're going to talk to everybody that is willing to talk with us and make the absolute best case for new leadership in the DA's office that we can make.
It's big news, Seth, and I do hope that some of the Boston media outlets within the sound of my voice, our voices, are able to get down there tonight to the Wamsutta Club and cover this launch, because it is historic. You're the first Republican candidate in 50 years. That's incredible. So thanks for, you know, just stepping up. That's enough for a lot of people. So we'll see you there tonight at the Wamsutta Club. Thank you so much for your time, Seth. We'll speak with you again shortly. I'm Taylor Cormier. This is the Grace Curley Show, and we do love Omaha Steaks here at the Grace Curley Show. The weather is cleared up. I was asked when I get home today to start grilling, and I may do just that. And if I do just that, it's going to be with Omaha Steaks. And now during their early Black Friday sale, I can stock up. I can get 50% off site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites at omahasteaks.com. Plus, our listeners get an extra $35 off with promo code GRACE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. The steaks are fantastic. If you want something that's easy, I mean, the steaks are easy enough. But if you want something super easy, might I recommend the hot dogs? The best hot dogs I've ever had. A great snap, great flavor. They're big. They're a hearty hot dog, and you're not going to enjoy them. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. The early Black Friday sale is the perfect time to shop for the best deals. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. Makes a great gift. By the way, if you're shopping for somebody, you just don't know what to get them. Maybe they have everything, or maybe they're just really picky like me. I'm very hard to shop for. You buy me steak, you've got a friend for life. Omaha Steaks offers an exclusive lineup of USDA certified tender steaks, and their fan favorite filet mignons have achieved the distinction of USDA certified very tender. They also carry mouth-watering burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and delectable desserts. The apple tartlets are fantastic. Save big with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites during their early Black Friday sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code GRACE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com. Promo code GRACE at checkout. We'll check in with Aaron Chadbourne coming up next on The Grace Curley Show.
Watch the show live. Rumble.com/The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Today's Chadbourne Chat, previously known as the car crossover until Monday, and we'll run through Friday, brought to you by Tux Trucks GMC. It's not too early to think about preseason maintenance on your Fisher Plow. Tux Trucks GMC in Hudson, Mass. is your Fisher Plow distributor. Fisher Plows, spreaders, accessories, and parts to get you winter ready. TuxTrucksGMC.com. Aaron, it's true. Seth Moulton, he really does look in the mirror every morning and sees a president, and he's making his next move toward that end, and he's challenging Ed Markey for his senatorship. So Maine and Massachusetts closely linked by a Democratic rivalry.
He did already run for president, didn't he? Remember he pulled papers, he ran last time?
Yeah, it was, I guess he's found a more practical route this time, though. That last one didn't really last all that long. I think he dropped out before Eric Swalwell did.
Well, Seth Moulton is responsible for bringing us Jared Golden. He was part of the recruitment effort that led to Golden. Do we know yet if he's at all connected with Graham Plattner?
With Graham Plattner?
Because Plattner's also a veteran. And so Seth Moulton was like part of this crop of these young, disaffected veterans who came out. Some of them went to the right, some of them went to the left. And Seth had this idea that like maybe instead of recruiting, you know, the Ilhan Omars of the world, he would recruit some veterans who had crazy ideas. And so I've been wondering and listening to how unhinged Graham Plattner is, whether or not he was connected to Seth Moulton. Anyway,
so I was listening to you yesterday, and neither you nor myself really had much knowledge of who Graham Plattner was. I'm sure
came out of nowhere.
You've done your homework, I'm sure. Who is Graham Plattner?
That's still the thing. Like I don't know that he's a real person. I've never met him. I lived in Maine most of my life.
I've seen the ad, and it does seem like he's kind of an AI composite of what you'd want a rough and tough liberal to look like.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's the real deal. The people and there are people in the Democrat Party, they didn't know him either. I've been around Maine politics for a long time. He does have a backstory, and I assume that it's true. I've just never heard of this guy or met this guy. So I don't know. Maybe I'll try to get him on the show. I'll see if he'll come on.
Yeah, that's a great idea. If you're a smart candidate, you would come on the Howie Carr Show, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, to defend your views. What else do you have coming up on the show today, Aaron?
You know, there's been so much going on, Taylor, that we got to just do a check-in. I haven't had time to talk much about Katie Porter, and so I wanted to make sure I got time on her today. I haven't never seen the implosion of a candidate for anything as dramatically, and she's now trying to spin with PR, and I want to see what people think and whether they think that it's working. So definitely want to spend time on that.
Yeah, there's been like, what, two or three new videos that have come out of her berating staff members. And she was asked, I haven't played the cut yet, saved it for you. But she was asked, are there any more videos coming out? And basically she's like, I hope not.
But she wouldn't. I mean, obviously, you know, there are definitely more staffer videos. And the leaks come when they're just like with Amy Klobuchar and others. Like if you mistreat the people that work for you, like, it's going to come out. It's going to come out eventually. You can't hide it forever.
Aaron, you've never mistreated me, and I hope I've never mistreated you. Aaron Chadbourne is coming up next for the Howie Carr Show. This has been The Grace Curley Show. I'm Taylor Cormier.